Berkshire Playwrights Lab will present the Berkshire Playwrights Lab 5th Season Gala Celebration on June 9th at 7:30, as well as staged readings throughout the summer. The gala, again on June 9th, is very special as always, including the work from playwrights Richard Dresser, David Mamet, Tom Minter, and Kevin Christopher Snipes, among many, many more. Jay Thomas will be along with Treat Williams, Elizabeth Franz, and many other terrific actors to be a part of this year's gala. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Jay Thomas back to the roundtable. Jay, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. Thank you very much. Thanks.
You were here 2 years ago, I guess, doing the Berkshire Playwrights Lab. And this is something you enjoy doing.
Well, yeah. I mean, it also allows me to continue practicing acting, which is what it is. It's almost one of these things when you don't do it. And when you get on stage, and even if it's a stage reading, it's a lot different experience than doing a movie or a TV show. And you forget how to do it. You lose your timing a little bit. And so for all of us, it's, I guess, like a doctor going back for extra courses or whatever. It helps. I don't do a lot of theater anymore because I have a radio show, and I still do a couple of films a year or a TV show. So for me, the theater is always refreshing.
So let's just talk about your schedule for a minute, because I was just, as we tape this on a Friday morning, you just got off the air at 10 a.m. Eastern time, but you're out in Los Angeles, so...
7 a.m., yeah.
Yeah, it's a very early show, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I have an afternoon show at Sirius XM on Channel 104 in the afternoon, 3 to 6 Eastern, which is noon to 3 out here, and I also have a studio in New Orleans and North Carolina, and then four years back, Howard Stern started taking Fridays off, and they started putting me on for some live programming, and I get up at 2 and get to work at 4 and get off at 7. I've been doing radio my whole life. I've done crazy hours. I don't know how many days a week I could do this, you know, in a row. But so it's an early day for me on the Friday morning.
And Howard's now off Thursday, so you could do that too, right?
but they haven't come up with any extra money yet. So,
well, good luck.
It's what I do for a living. But right now, I guess they've talked about it, me doing Thursday and Friday, but we haven't done it. And hell yeah, you know, for more money, sure, I would do it.
Do you find a difference in the audience and the callers again? I mean, I hope you don't take this offense, but I assume most of the people, myself included in this, who listen and call in are nuts. So, I mean, do you see a difference between a morning audience and an afternoon audience?
Well, the audience is not so much different if it's your show. When you go into the Howard world, which I started doing, I don't even know how many years it is now. It might be 4. You know, they have no interest in you. They want to hear him. If I was the morning guy and somebody else comes in, they would have no interest in hearing that person. So that was the hardest thing, is to venture into that world. It was, you know, flattering that he said you should come on and do it. But the morning and the afternoon audience on a talk station, no, they're not that different. They're listening. They want to respond. We have a lot of, you know, cross-country truckers, and we're also international. So you got Sirius XM is being heard, Canada, Mexico, you know, the Caribbean. We get calls from ships at sea, from guys in a gold mine in Alaska. So in that way, it's really interesting. Whereas most places you're in one town, and the listeners are calling about that city or, you know, that group. So, but on Sirius XM, no, they're all on the move. I'm sure 80% of our listeners, you know, in a car or a truck. And it's uncensored. So, hell, they can't wait to get on the air and say something horrifying.
It makes it fun. But after being for so many years on terrestrial radio, was that just freeing for you?
You know, it's like a little kid with candy. You know, the first few months, I couldn't say enough horrible things. And then after a while, you know, you get over it and you want to have some real content and you get kind of caught up. And I realized after 6 months, you know, nothing but perverts are calling this show. So I think I started really working on just making it a real, you know, talk show. I have tons of guests. I had Bob Newhart on just the other day to talk about the 40th anniversary of his show.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't any cursing, you know, on that. I've had most of the presidential candidates have come on. We also will have strippers and dominatrixes and you know, football players. What's fun is you'll have a conversation and somebody will say something. They'll, you know, throw a curse word out there and they go, oh, I'm sorry. I go, well, you don't have to worry. And it does make you realize how silly terrestrial radio is when words that people use every day could be thrown out sparingly and the world wouldn't end. But I don't think that'll ever happen in our lifetime in terrestrial radio. So, like right now, I have, you know, I'm not going to say anything, you know, untoward while we're doing this interview.
Right.
So it's easy. I go on talk shows and then you get on terrestrial radio and then I make fun of doing this interview and not talking the way I want to. You know. So I'll make this into material somehow. Also.
That's good. We like that. So you're shooting a movie now.
You know, it's odd. The schedule's one thing, but also I think being an actor, you know, over 50, once you get over 50, for men and for women, it really does change. And so you know, I wasn't doing very many interesting things. I think I have something on Showtime or Cinemax called Pool Boys, which is really a remake of Risky Business, and I'd go down to New Orleans and we'd do these movies that really looked like they were somebody trying to make money off of the tax credit more than make a movie. But then recently I got an offer to do a film with Kate Beckinsale and Nick Nolte, so I'm in the middle of doing that. And then the other day I got a call to maybe do something with Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg. And then I do have something with Nicolas Cage later in the summer. And I haven't worked with big-name people in a long time. Now, I'm playing the quintessential sleazy lawyer, the sleazy veterinarian, and then the sleazy wallpaper salesman. And in two of the three movies, I get Nicolas Cage blows my brains out, and I think Denzel Washington blows my kneecap off. So... And then with Nick Nolte, I'm the sleazy lawyer. So now I'm, you know, I just play nothing but snakes now, you know, and cry and I bleed. And it's fun. I've never, you know, I've always wanted to play these guys, you know, but they're like enough to where it doesn't affect my radio. And they work around my schedule and they give me plenty of time off to do it. So that's, and I'm happy as I can be. I do five or six great scenes with recognizable people. That's all I need.
You, besides playing the Easter Bunny in the Santa Claus movies,
yeah.
You have you often play sleazy and Jewish, and you are neither.
Yeah. No, and I'm from the South.
Yeah.
So and I'm Catholic, and my mother was a Sicilian, and my father was English and German, and when I moved to New York. From New Orleans, which has kind of a Brooklyn, Boston accent, I would read for the part of a Southerner, and they would go, no, you're Dr. Shapiro. So then I think when I was a kid, you know, I have a lot of Jewish friends. Even when I went to North Carolina, it's funny, and I've had three wives. Two out of the three were Jewish. So there's something about me, and even when I moved to New York, everyone thought I was Jewish and you know, raised in Brooklyn or wherever, but I'm a New Orleanian, you know, and John Larroquette is from New Orleans also, and you wouldn't know that he's a Southerner, and Harry Connick is from New Orleans, went to my high school, and he sings like Frank Sinatra, so that would be kind of a Jersey, you know, Brooklyn kind of a thing, so I don't think people meet New Orleanians and realize they're really deep Southerners.
Was the big break Mork and Mindy in TV?
You know, I was a DJ in Charlotte, North Carolina, and ran the two or three stations and was a sports announcer and could have stayed down there and probably, you know, built a small radio empire. And I knew that if I didn't go and try making it in the big show, it wasn't radio. I wanted to really be an actor and a comedian. And so I took a pay cut to move to New York. To work at a station called 99X, Yeah, within a couple of years, I was doing stand-up at the Improv and doing these off-off, way-off Broadway theaters. And I got invited to audition for Mork and Mindy, and I got it. And I'd only been in town a couple of years. But then I don't think they thought I was any good and really didn't use me, or Robin wasn't crazy about me. And I did like 30 shows, but I probably didn't have, you know, 50 lines in those 30 shows, and was kind of unceremoniously let go. And I remember Gary Marshall saying, I hope we didn't hurt your radio career. Right. And I thought, good Lord, you know, this is terrible. So I kind of stumbled back into New York and am really embarrassed, and get another radio job, and then started doing theater. Took one off. Instead of doing off, I got to do off Broadway. And really probably became a better actor and can do many more roles, because when I went back to New York, I really believe that's where you hone your acting is in New York. I think it's a more interesting place to live and to start out. And so when I did go back to Hollywood after getting replaced by Howard Stern and canned in radio, and I ended up back in L.A., and I was doing, I think, the radio there, and then I auditioned for Cheers and was just a better actor. And they even said, well, we don't want to read that guy from Mork and Mindy, the guy with the white guy with the afro. That's what I was. I had one of the few white. And I was, and it wasn't a real heavy comedic role. It was a sweet guy, Eddie Lebeck. And then I moved to Murphy Brown, and I was doing theater and got to do movies and stuff. So I believe that if I'd stayed in L.A. and I'd gotten a bigger break on Mork and Mindy, I think I would have just kind of been not a very well-trained actor from a sitcom. I don't really think I would have been as well-rounded as I was had I not gone back to New York.
Well, you get to show off the acting as part of the Berkshire Playwrights Lab 5th Season Gala Celebration. It's June 9th at 7:30. And Jay Thomas, it's always great to have you on the program. We look forward to seeing you again in the Berkshires.
My pleasure. And what I love about it, there's a guy there that makes this incredible bourbon and vodka. He's a local distiller.
Oh, really?
There. Yeah, I guess he owns a little bar. I was in there. I got to seek it out again because I bought two or three bottles and brought it back. So you'll just probably see me laying in the gutter after a couple of the performances. So that's my New Orleans heritage coming out right there.
We look forward to it. Jay Thomas, a pleasure. Thanks very much. Have fun.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, it's the Berkshire Playwrights Lab, the 5th Season Gala Celebration on June 9th at 7:30. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.